Hey guys, welcome back.
Here we are at the Book Report.
Yeah, we're moving along. We've wrapped up Wayward Child and we're heading to Sing Sing.
Girl, we're going over to Sing Sing, but before we get there,
we're all going to jail right now. Here we go.
We're all in for another bumpy ride. Just when, you know, Wayward Child was filled with all these like emotional childhood traumatic moments. And I was like, oh, thank goodness that whole part is over because now we don't have to live in that anymore.
Yeah.
But we know what's to come in Sing Sing.
Yeah. And but also we kind of left Wayward Child as a teenager in school and was kind of at the tail end of school now.
Uh-huh.
And almost going straight into Sing Sing. As a teen.
There isn't much in between
there's
there.
There's not a big gap.
I mean, if you think about it, okay, like, her debut was in 1990.
Yeah.
She was out of high school by, like, 90 or 88.
Uh-huh.
That's 2 years is, like, a snap of a finger.
Yeah.
And she was out hustling those 2 years, even prior to those 2 years. But you know what I mean? Like, she got the record deal and she was moving right along into Sing Sing.
Mm-hmm.
But another reason I'm sort of, like, sort of having a sigh of relief, not only because Wayward Child part was so traumatic, but also now this is like parts of Mariah that we are familiar with as lambs. Like we know like the Tommy Mottola, you know, the Brenda K. Starr moments.
Mm-hmm.
We know, you know, the glitz, the glamour. She was now a huge star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so now I feel like, okay, this is more of the familiar Mariah that I know, even though there's so much coming up in these chapters that we did not know.
Yeah.
Like we thought we knew, but we didn't know.
Yeah. And we also are getting introduced to some new characters, new people that she's working with. New York City plays a big part in these chapters. So we're moving on up.
So this week we're going to cover the first two chapters of Sing Sing, which are a prelude to Sing Sing and Alone in Love.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's basically going to tell us is she's moved from the Long Island, you know, all of that music scene. And now she's here in the big nitty gritty city.
Transitional moment.
It's very transitional moments. So let's get started with a prelude to Sing Sing. She opens it up with lyrics from Close My Eyes, which of course are my favorite.
Yeah.
That whole song alone has like you can connect it to so many points in Mariah's life.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was such a mashup of moments.
I know, it's so many things compiled and parts from here and parts from there, but maybe that's why it took her so long to write it.
Mm.
She started writing it in like 93 or 94 and 3-4 years before it ended up on Butterfly.
Yeah.
That's why it's so monumental.
And do you think it's the soundtrack to the book? Because she did include it in the rarities. As the acoustic version?
I think there is, yeah, definitely, like an overall, it's like an overall Mariah's theme, if you will.
Mm.
That's why I love it, because I connect with that song so much and for so many different reasons.
Yeah.
Because you can use it in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think overall, it definitely like sums everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And so she needed to put it on the rarities, little acoustic version.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in A Prelude to Sing Sing. And here she's just sort of laying out the tone of what we're about to walk into.
Right.
And she talks basically about her marriage and how suffocating it was and how she like ended up in this and how does she even start to navigate it because she instantly is feeling trapped.
But also kind of explains, it seems like she doesn't know how it happened. She just got sucked into it.
Right before her own eyes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't know and sometimes there is no explanation. It's just that's the way the river was flowing, you know, and as determined as Mariah was to like have her dreams and her goals come through, she was not expecting something like Tommy Mottola to come along.
Right.
But then again, where would we be with no Tommy Mottola?
True.
So it's just, girl, it just happens.
It's just part of the story.
It's just part of the story.
Yeah, a whole chapter, actually.
Whole section of a book, actually.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things, of course, is she starts talking about Tommy right off the top of the bat on page 97.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts describing him as weather or their relationship.
Yeah.
And here we are again with that weather pattern of these people in Mariah's life.
But she's also kind of explaining that they did not end on good terms and she doesn't look back at their marriage with fondness at all. Like there was nothing good about it.
No.
So she says, it's not that there are no words. It's just that they still get stuck moving up from my gut or they disappear into the thickness of my anxiety. So clearly, the whole situation was just traumatizing to her.
Yeah.
This wasn't a happy marriage or situation, happy situation.
But on the outside, everyone thinks it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I can tell you, even from my fan perspective, I thought Mariah just had the golden life until there was a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't come till like, you know, 97. So I just thought she was just happy living her rich life.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that that was not happening.
Tommy's energy was intense. More than overbearing for me, it was an entire atmosphere. Even before he would enter the room, I could sense the air change and my breath grow short. Stifling her.
Yeah, it's very much like how she was equating, like, you know, the smelling of the rain with Morgan's rage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. Like, she's so used to it, she can sense it around her.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, girl.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she learned that skill as a kid.
Oh, and she's carrying it with her.
Yeah.
Carrying it with her. That's why she's still sort of, you know, like you were just saying, like her anxiety from it, like it's still stuck there.
Yeah.
Which always makes me go into like the song Side Effects.
Because she's already seen as a kid when that energy comes, it escalates eventually into violence.
Right. But it came so discreetly with Tommy that she didn't even realize it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's there, and she's like, I just need to, like, I need this.
Mm.
I need this record deal. I need this to happen. And then this relationship comes along at the same time, and it's almost like, I can't think about the relationship. I just have to do it so I can just get my record out.
Right.
You know what I mean? So things just happen.
No, but I feel like this kind of ties into the Me Too movement, where you're there for work, and then men come and swindle women.
Oh, yes, honey, it's been going on for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Yes, we got that.
So this is an obvious case of that.
Oh, Mariah was living the Me Too before the Me Too was even known.
Yes.
Most women do live in that situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course, Tommy's, you know, typical male. But she goes on, right before we turn the page on 97, I love that she says, I was disappearing in installments. Mm. So it wasn't just all at once. It didn't happen like overnight. It's almost like you don't even realize you've lost a part of yourself until it's already gone.
Growing numb to the madness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hello. Close my eyes. Okay. Yeah.
We should have that lyric printed out on the side just so we can reference it.
We should have every lyric of that printed out just for reference point.
Yeah. But so she talks about how Tommy was like stifling her, keeping her away from her friends and cutting off her family little by little.
And now that is a sign of like a sociopath, psychopathic person.
Yes. And someone who's just obviously trying to get control of you.
Right.
Cutting you off.
And because there's business involved, obviously it's money, but also for him as a person, it's some sort of egotistical gain to keep her sequestered and under his control.
Yeah.
So it's not only just business, but it's personal.
I couldn't talk to anyone that wasn't under Tommy's control. I couldn't go out or do anything with anybody. I couldn't move freely in my own house.
And here she is thinking she has done it. She's made it. She's finally on her way.
Yeah.
And her home living situation is still not easy.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing. And she's like, how did it end up here? I've worked so hard.
Right. But
to get out of this.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. She escaped poverty.
Mm-hmm. Right back into another abusive, dysfunctional.
Where she's stuck.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And because her dream is entangled in that, it's really hard to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be like, oh, F you, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really think about these things.
Yeah, but it's not like she had the ability to be like, screw you, Tommy, I'm out of here. She had nowhere to go. She would have just gone back. She would have fallen backwards.
Exactly. You don't have any... That's another part
of
it.
She's not going back to her rich parents.
She can't go back home to Pat in the shack.
Uh-huh.
She's definitely not doing that.
Yeah.
So so that's why it's all tough. There's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
So much. I also love... She also talks about always having her handbag there. So she's ready to go.
But
where is she ready to go to?
Wait, just back to not being able to move around her own place. She's in jail.
Sing Sing?
Yeah, like she's literally in jail. She's being monitored. She can't move around freely. She can't slip out to get a snack.
And maybe a small part of her was thinking, like, I guess this is what happens to famous people, or I guess this is what happens when you marry somebody. I guess this is, you know, because she doesn't really have anything else to go off of. She's like, well, I guess this is what happens.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not.
Yeah, but this is wild. Many nights I would lie on my side of our massive bed, under which I kept my purse filled with essentials just in case I had to make a quick escape. My to-go bag. I'd wait for him to fall asleep, keeping my eyes locked on him. I would gradually inch my way to the edge of the bed and surgically roll my hips and swing my legs to the floor. So she's creeping out, sneaking out.
Just out of the bedroom.
Yeah,
I know. That alone is scary for her.
Like a prisoner.
Could you imagine?
Like a prisoner trying to creep out the window.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Fast forward, she's in the kitchen and then Tommy's awake. I jump up and the intercom will go off. I jump up and the words, what you doing, will crackle through. That is so creepy in the middle of the night.
I mean,
I bet it's dead quiet.
If I was in that situation, I would like to think that I would be like, go back to bed, sir.
Yeah.
Let me be. But when you're living in it, you're probably just like, oh my God, I don't want to start anything. Let me just, you know, but you can only do that for so long.
But just what a creep.
Of course.
Creep.
Of course.
Let the girl get a snack.
Can she please? Can she get a little bonbon or a little ice cream?
Write some lyrics. Leave her alone.
Please. Can she have some alone time? Everybody always looking over her.
I know.
I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So she goes on. She talks about how she's living her dream, but she couldn't leave her house.
Mm-hmm.
She's lonely. She says right here, she's like, captivity and control come in many forms, but the goal is always the same, to break down the captive's will, to kill off any notion of self-worth and erase the person's memory of their own soul. Now, people who do that kind of stuff, they're ill. They are mentally ill. Then I don't like them.
Do you think Talia is going through it?
I don't know, but I hope not. But I just feel like I've encountered people like that before. Another reason why I can totally relate to Mariah. Those people don't change. So I don't know what he has going on with his new wife, but that kind of stuff doesn't change. He didn't just like, I mean, it's been 25 years, so I'm sure he's in some way, shape, some forms, a different person. But that kind of mental abuse, mental captivity that you put on someone else, if you do that to someone, That's just you. Yeah. Especially as a grown adult. He's a grown man here.
Yeah.
20 years Mariah's senior. So he knows what he's doing. He knows the games he's playing.
Yeah, but also it's just like obvious insecurities getting projected onto Mariah.
Sure, for sure. Because look at what we have here. We have a young, very driven, talented woman. And he knows, because people who believe that they can do this to people, they can sort of pick them out of a crowd. Didn't Mariah say that in one of the last chapters, that like these people are predatory? They can see. So Tommy's looking at Mariah in a myriad of ways. Like, here's this young, talented girl. Here's this young, beautiful girl. And here's also this weak and fragile girl that I can take advantage of. He's got all that and he sees it right off the top of everything. And so he's going right in for it.
Yeah. Well, this visual of living my dream but couldn't leave my house, trapped, held captive in the relationship, that's the honey video.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And you know, back in the day, Mariah was always like, no, I just wanted it to be like a spy spoof.
She used to always say that.
It's like, girl.
We know, Mariah.
All right. That's what you tell Oprah. But we know what you're talking about.
Totally. Totally. But this is it. That's that visual right there.
Absolutely.
She'd like jump off the balcony to get out. Grab her to-go bag.
With her purse.
Jump off the balcony. Switch outfits. Jump on the jet ski and get out of there.
Exactly. And eventually she did. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. And she also says here right at the end, thankfully, I smuggled myself out bit by bit through the lyrics of my songs. So she's eventually smuggled herself completely out, but it's these little moments, and it's why she was always writing, singing, producing to feel some sort of freedom.
Yeah.
Because that's all she had. And she did it, and slowly but surely. Because getting out of that relationship, we're going to learn in this whole section, Sing Sing, is traumatic and hard. But not and only, emotional.
Yeah, but not only that. Like, this description of him being so controlling and monitoring her and what you're doing, Mariah, and just, like, always looking over her shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't escape that when she left him. He kept doing it, and that's what we see happen with Glitter. What are you working on? What are you doing? Who are you working with?
Right. And well,
what are you doing? What you doing?
Right. He set out a whole sabotage campaign.
Yeah,
of course.
She didn't leave the house. She never left him. He was still there. What you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Obsessed.
And she says right here at the end, sometimes I still feel the heaviness. Sometimes I still have no air. And that right there brings me to the, you know, the side effects song.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that later because she talks about it in a chapter side effects.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still because when you go through something that intense, it doesn't just disappear. You might like learn how to like emotionally handle it, but it just doesn't go away. Like that's mental abuse at its finest.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry she had to go through that, but it just is a testament to her drive and her talent and her mental strength. Because to break something, to break out of that takes mental strength.
Mm-hmm.
And she has it. But, you know, she grew up with the mental strength. She didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if like the way she grew up kind of unintentionally just pushed her into the Tommy relationship. Because you're just used to that kind of behavior.
Probably.
It was comfortable.
But it's probably also what got her out of it as well.
Mm.
Being around all of that turmoil growing up makes you a little bit more comfortable when you're in adult relationships and it's happening still. Because you're like, oh, well, this is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so interesting. Like, I can't imagine that happening in today's world. If Mariah was starting up now, marrying the head of the Sony, of the record label, it'd be a total scandal.
It would be a total scandal.
The label would have got involved and be like, don't be touching the employees.
Yeah, but the label did get involved in 1990. He's the head of the label.
He's the label, yeah. I mean, like now, these days.
Right. Like, you know, that would be sexual harassment.
Yeah.
There'd be all kinds of things all the going things. On. But
there's a reason that it's so pushed back against now because it's wrong.
Of course.
And Fs you up. And so poor Mariah, little 19-year-old Mariah, has totally got sucked into that.
But things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Can't always like explain them away.
Mm.
So that's just setting the tone, by the way, of what we're going to get into in this whole section.
It's a warning. Like, this isn't good.
Exactly. This is, be prepared.
Yeah.
Just how she sort of opened up with like the mom chapter.
Oh, yeah.
How like the first few sentences and paragraphs were like, okay, get ready, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
This first chapter, this prelude to Sing Sing lets us know.
Yeah.
So let's move forward to Alone in Love on page 100.
Yeah. Okay. We're down to business.
Yes. Now we're seeing how she's putting all her talent and her goals and dreams into action.
Yeah, and it feels like we're getting back to her musical roots, but I think we're at the point now where Pat isn't taking us to the club anymore, training us. We're ready to go.
Yeah.
She's got the skills. She knows she has the talent, the ability to sing and create music. So now she's just refining that skill.
Right.
Herself.
She says in seventh grade, she was doing backgrounds and demos. Now, how old is someone in seventh grade? I wouldn't even be able to tell you. You got to be like, you're probably 13.
Yeah, seventh
14,
grade.
14.
Six. You're about 12, 13, 14. Yeah, I'll say.
So she has the skills already.
Right.
I mean, she's a little girl here working in the business.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I began to discover how to create nuances and textures in vocal arrangements and how to use my voice to build layers like a painter. This was when my romance with the studio began. This was a major moment that began my journey, my drive to succeed.
Mm.
That's it.
Well, see, that's where you see the difference with what Pat was teaching her to sing live and improvise and just do jazz riffs and what have you. Now she's seeing in the studio, you can layer that and do something completely different.
There's like a more, like an extra layer of creativeness on there.
You can build.
Mm-hmm. And she's feeling like when she's in the studio and creating these things, she feels more safe because it's an outlet for her from everything that she's been going through.
Mm-hmm. So I wrote a note saying, you know, we're at this point where she has, as a kid, and growing up, she's been doodling notes and ideas and writing lyrics, but now she's turning those into actual songs.
Yeah.
She's at that point.
The progression of it is all happening here at a very young age.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't tell you what I was doing at 12, but it certainly wasn't anything on the level of that.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious. And but she says she was doing all the poems and things. And she says, I had been writing since before I was a teenager. So she's been doing this for so long.
Yeah.
So it's something that's just second nature to her.
But she's also figured out she can make a little money doing this.
And she has to make a little money because Pat certainly ain't doing nothing.
Yeah. Well, were you working when you were like 13?
No.
I had a job walking a dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I never had any of those like neighborhood type jobs.
Oh, really?
No, because me, like mowing someone's lawn or like doing like shoveling. Girl, please. No, my brothers did those things.
Yeah.
I waited until I was 16 and then I like started working at a store.
Oh, I was 14 and a half-ish when I started working at McDonald's on the weekend.
Oh, see, we can't work that young here in the United States.
I think the age is 14 and 9 months. You can get your first job.
Why 9 months?
I don't know. It was weird.
That's so strange.
I know.
Oh, strange. I mean, it's not strange. It's just like, that's an odd number of months to add on to 14 years and 9 months.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
I guess.
But yeah, like on the weekends or after school.
Oh, you can only work like certain like number of hours, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to look into that. I was just working on after school or whatever on the weekends. But that's what I was doing. Mariah's out here.
Mariah's out here crafting magic.
Yeah, doing backgrounds and stuff.
Jesus. And I'm like, can I get a job? I've been waiting for one.
So it makes sense. I had the urge to work because my first job walking the dog, I was like, oh, I can make some coins and buy my video games or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
So you get the hunger for it.
Yeah, definitely, because it gives you a sense of independence,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not beholden to anybody else. You're like, I'm making my money. I can buy what I want, do what I want.
Yeah.
And for Mariah, it's not only that. It's also like an escapism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she talks about when her mom was sleeping or out at work or doing something. She's sitting at the piano and she's humming away tunes.
Mm-hmm.
She's crafting
mm-hmm.
beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, could you imagine hearing Lil Mariah at the piano, 12 years old?
Yeah.
I just can't. I would love it.
I know.
I would love it.
I know.
I wish like, because you know, like nowadays, a 12-year-old, if they have amazing talent, it's recorded by everybody and their brother.
Right.
Back in 1970.
Not even a 5-year-old.
Exactly. A 5-year-old. Like, you know what I mean?
The
like,
phone comes straight out.
Where's all the video of Little Mariah?
Where's the iPhone video
yes.
of Little Mariah?
That's what I want. Ugh. The
know.
Days before technology.
It's just
we
lost.
Miss so much
I
of
know.
Little Mariah.
Well, okay. So she's talking about how basically like this is the origins of her career, really. Just writing songs for ads, working behind the scenes for these Wayne World type guys who had a TV show or something. Like this is the beginning.
Yeah. These guys. So she's like found these guys out on Long Island.
Yeah.
They're making music. They're doing things. And Little Mariah's there. And she's able to hone her craft.
Mm-hmm. But look, it's not Pat that did it for her. And it's not Tommy Mottola that did it for her. She was doing it on her own for a while.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because people could see her talent.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't going to be completely hard, even though I'm sure it was.
And she's realizing she could make it a business, make it her job.
Yeah. She also thinks that she can hear things that other people can't hear.
Yeah.
Like on page 101, she says, I trusted the music I was hearing in my head. I believed it was akin to the popular songs I heard on the radio. My songs didn't mimic the style or the sound of what I heard. Rather, I would always search for the right sound. The one that felt like me.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, she's not just going with your everyday trend. She's not just doing the music that these guys want to do. Like she's listening to what is unique and different and feels good. And that I think is what helps Mariah nowadays emote music the way in which she does. Cause she's been listening for those nuances since she was young.
Yeah. I mean, I would say she was studying what's out there and figuring out what she can do that's different.
Right. There you go.
Find her voice, her
exactly.
unique voice. Versus being like, oh, is this what's popular right now? Let me just do that.
Right. And that's usually what people will do, especially nowadays.
Mm.
But, you know,
mm-hmm.
we love everybody.
Mm-hmm. but also, speaking of nowadays, look at the young girls coming up, copy Mariah. And her stylings.
Yes, absolutely.
That didn't exist for Mariah.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
Uh-huh.
So she was being her unique, creative, artistic self.
Yeah.
Even as a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
The one part I do want to point out here is she also said that this is where working with some of these guys is where she wrote and produced one of her first demos, which is called To Begin,
mm-hmm.
which I had never heard or she had never mentioned before. So that was a new little nugget.
It is, but she says, I still love it. But sadly, it's among one of the many lost tapes of Little Mariah. So there's more out there.
Of course there is.
Lost on Long Island.
So even though we don't have our iPhones, Mariah was recording little things here and there.
I wonder if those tapes, they must be in the trash. Do you think?
I mean, you know.
Or do you think they're just sitting in someone's basement or something?
Or garage.
Yeah.
Out on Long Island somewhere. Well, I don't know, because I would think like once Mariah becomes famous, these guys that she's working with in the studio here, they had to be like, oh, that's the little girl. You know, so I think, I don't know. If they had them, they would know that they have those tapes.
Right.
So maybe not. I don't know.
Well, maybe they took it out of the basement and put it in the house.
Yeah.
To keep it safe. Maybe they still exist.
Mm. Who knows? But by the time Mariah was 15, she had outgrown them men. And she started, you know, getting other gigs and working with other folks.
Mm.
They wanted her to create that voice of like the current day, like AKA the Madonnas and the whatnots.
Mm-hmm.
And Mariah says, I had that young girl quality that was popular at the time, largely because of Madonna's success. But I was actually a young girl and my vocals could get into that high pitch range naturally.
Right.
So she could emulate these things and that's what people wanted.
So it's kind of shading Madonna there, but at the same time, when you think about it, I feel like she got the same kind of slack where people would say she's just a studio production. Like those high notes are just the studio pitch thing being turned up or whatever. But I guess that's what people did back then because Madonna can't sing that high.
No, Madonna can't sing that high.
Because I feel like when Madonna did Evita, that's when the first time she had singing lessons.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
She says it in her book. It was the first time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, not bad. She sounded good and on Evita, though.
She did sound good. Madonna has a deep voice.
Yeah.
A deep singing voice.
Yeah.
But
she has nothing like Mariah.
No.
Nothing like it.
But Mariah's listening to it, saying, oh, I can do that.
Yeah, well, you know, when Mariah tells this little story about how people wanted her to sound like, you know, the Madonna of the day or whatever, mm-hmm. I instantly am brought back to that leaked demo tape from the late 80s and where she sings the song Weakness of My Body or mm-hmm. Weakness of the Body. Because I'm like, oh, this sounds like one of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
That Madonna could sing this song. Paula Abdul could sing this song. You know, anybody could sing this song. And Mariah, how she changes and uses her voice to mimic sort of that.
Yeah.
Because when you listen to Weakness of the Body, it's like, oh my God, that's Mariah. It doesn't like sound like our typical Mariah song.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show Mariah can do anything because she has studied, she has learned, she has put the time and effort in to have a good ear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why she's genius.
And her voice has that flexibility.
Yes.
It can do these simple arrangements, but then she knows there's a more complex voice in there.
Because what's really simple for Mariah to do is maybe really hard for others to do.
Yes.
Not naming any names. We love everybody.
It didn't mean a thing. I guess I needed to prove my love was true. I had to feel the sting. Of a night in another's arms away from you. Now I'm lying, staring at the ceiling, held in my pain. Oh, now I'm crying. I turn our days of sunshine into these days and nights of rain. I have the strength of heart, but a weakness of the body. It tore my love apart. Now I'm feeling sad and lonely.
Okay, so this part in general, talking about Madonna in the studio, She tells us this is one of her first regular gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Working for two sketchy guys who made demos. That was their job, making demos.
Right. And, you know, it's because everybody needs, songwriters need other people to sing their songs because they usually can't sing them.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Even everybody, demos, everybody's doing demos.
All day long.
Yeah. Even like, Brandy does demos to this day.
Other people's
has
demos?
Yes, and she has a Grammy.
As a job?
No shade. I love Brandy, but yes.
What does she do? Oh, like as a job, she'll sing demos.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, girl.
You gotta make that money.
Gotta make that money.
Oh, didn't know that.
I'm not to put her out on Front Street like that, but she does.
Wait, so there's a bunch of songs out there, Brandy songs that are just demos?
Yeah. Oh, there's like a 50 of them that I could like pull up and they're actually really good.
Yeah, I'm sure they're good.
Because she can sing.
She's a good singer.
Oh, she's amazing. That's why I say it's not shady.
No, but if you're a songwriter, even if you're writing a TV commercial, a song for a TV commercial, you need someone to sing it.
Exactly.
So you can pitch it.
And so Mariah was like that girl for like the Long Island scene. Mm-hmm. Everybody was going to her.
Yes.
And she found these two guys. They're guys. But also what
well,
I found...
she says sketchy.
Sketchy, which means like what? That could mean a million things.
Pays in cash?
Well... Okay, she probably was getting paid under the table because she's like 13. But I don't know like what that means.
I
found it interesting when Mariah talks about the unspoken sort of jealousy or like disdain that she's like getting from their wives.
Mm.
It's like, here's little Mariah just trying to sing. She ain't worried about nobody's business but her own.
Yeah. I think she's kind of pointing out, like, this is what the music industry is. Just sketchy guys all around.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think this is where she says somewhere in here, she says, like, this was her first, like, you know, this was her first moment realizing what the music industry is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what she has to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least she's learning young.
Mm-hmm.
So she has some sort of idea. But it's also nonsense. Like, can't we just do the work and then go on about our lives?
I know.
That's all we're asking for.
Like, what a mess.
But it was also through these guys that she started, again, realizing that she has something better than they have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she, like, whatever you guys want me to sing, sure, I'll sing it for the money. But I'm here and that now I'm able to really get behind the board in the studio and behind the mic and really craft things that, you know, that are her own
mm-hmm.
and that are unique and timeless. Cause she goes to tell about how she was later, she says, I was able to make a deal with one of the guys who owned a studio. I would sing demos for him and he would let me work on my own.
Mm.
And that's how she had written Alone in Love.
At this point in her life, she found the tools that she needs.
Yes. Like actually getting behind there and learning how to actually physical tools.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She said she's figured out the setup and she experimented with songs. I did dance tracks straight down the line, all different sounds. I learned how to produce under pressure. I was in the studio doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you got to do it hands-on and then you're going to know. And the fact that Mariah was doing this so young just goes to show why she today can produce a song
mm-hmm.
like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's not just, you know, a voice. She's not just a songwriter. She also produces everything.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy job.
And we also learned that she's not just doing the song. She's checking out the scene too. So she's listening to the radio. She says, earlier, she said that like, she's got her finger on the pulse of the culture, like what everybody else is listening to and doing and making. And like, she says, I studied the music on the radio closely, constantly analyzing what was in heavy rotation. So just keeping up to date with everything, too.
Right. And that's how she knows that she's not down with what these garage band sketchy guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, y'all can have fun with your little hobby, but I got business to take care of here.
Mm-hmm.
I got some talent for the world to know.
Right.
Can we also give a little shout out to the audiobook when she sings Alone in Love? Because that was magical. Just gonna throw that out there.
Really good. And I wrote down this note, pre-Sony Music.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So we're getting like before the label
Yeah.
Comes in.
And these are songs that end up on her debut album.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to talk about that in the next coming chapters. Because we got some shady businessmen to deal with.
More of them.
Here we go. Here we go. So then she goes on to sort of like set the visual of what she's doing now. She's in school, but she's living out in Long Island, but now she's going to be in the city. So she's constantly coming back and forth, driving in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, when Mariah did that homecoming special back in 1999, and she was always talking about she was showing up late. You know, she'd show up during third period and she'd always be in detention and getting in all these things. It's because she was working.
Yeah.
But she wasn't really telling anybody.
Right.
Because she wanted to keep it on her own.
And I bet they just thought maybe she was running the streets.
Very much could have thought of that.
Meanwhile, she's in the studio working like as a professional.
She's laying the foundation to a huge worldwide iconic career.
Uh-huh.
And these people don't even know it. So like there was the one guy who was like, oh yeah, right. You'll be working at the Hojo's.
Mm-hmm.
Now I didn't know nothing about a Hojo, but now I know. Thank you, Mariah.
Yeah. It was one of those things. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, nobody believes it, yeah. You know? Well, here's the thing. We also know that nobody other than her mother really believed in it. You know, her dad was like totally against it. He's like, girl, go to school.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, mom is there and she's showing it, but she's not really laying the path foundation
to success
for like a long extended career.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And now we have classmates of hers also not believing it. And so sometimes it is better just to not say anything and just show them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to tell you because you just got things to say and you don't matter. Like, Mariah had, like, her blinders on. She was going for it.
I love this visual of Mariah driving up the Bronx Expressway as a little teen.
I know.
Trying to get home.
Skinny little Mariah.
Yeah.
Just driving. You know what it reminds me of instantly is for the movie Wise Girls when she's driving in the car.
Oh, yeah.
To like deliver the package. Yeah. She's listening to that song and it's like raining out.
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of that. Just Mariah driving is just crazy.
But do you, we forgot to talk about in Wayward Child.
What?
That visual of Mariah being the fastest runner in the school.
Oh, right. Well, she got some long legs.
She does.
She does.
Speaking of Mariah doing things.
Exactly.
Can you imagine Mariah being a speedy runner?
Sure, why not? I mean, no. No, she's too she's too fabulous for that. Yeah. She can't have her sweating. We can't have her doing all of that.
Right?
No, no, no. So we go on from all of that. She does like this little cute flash forward in the book on page 105, where she talks about nobody knew who she was. She kept it all a secret. She had just signed her record deal. And then she talks about when she first performed at the NBA game.
Mm.
And she sang America the Beautiful and she went up and did the high notes and all of this. And basically, like the man had said, the palace now has a queen.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was like, what? Nobody heard stuff like that. I mean, Whitney Houston, for sure, at that point in time. But that was about it.
So those Long Island folk were gagged.
Oh, they were gagged. And she says, like, they're all jocks. So she knew that they were all back home watching.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what
she was like, I'm going to show y'all. I'm going to show y'all.
Funny.
And then I love how the next paragraph right after that, she talks about the breakthrough debut television, like nighttime television performance on the Arsenio Hall show, and how that was also very, very important.
This is Mariah Carey. Give it up.
Mariah Carey, Mariah Carey.
Being on that show, you know, it was kind of bizarre because I was just like, aren't I just the kid that was just at home watching this show? I was really nervous because that show was so huge at the time, and it was a big moment for me.
I thought the Tonight Show was definitely going to get this book. I was at the Ivy one night, and Tommy Mottola came up, and he gave me this tape, and he said, "See the girl sitting at the table with me. This girl is a cross of everything great in R&B. And if you heard her, it would blow you away." He promised me that if I liked it, he would break it on my show. And it was a hell of a night.
So she's made it. That's it.
That's it. And the people know.
Yeah.
Now she's telling them. So all those kids back in the Long Island.
Yeah, why are you turning up to school so late? Been doing this, working on this moment.
Right. I'm working, honey.
Planning
she's
her escape.
Working.
Planning the escape.
And planning the escape is really what it really is.
Yeah.
And then she like sort of comes back to like the moment in time where she's working with people in New York. When she meets Gavin Christopher, that sort of brings a whole nother aspect to things because he's legit like successful in the field.
Right, and he
knows a lot of people.
Yeah, but he's writing actual hits.
Exactly.
Big hits for Rufus. Produce songs for Grandmaster Flash, big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's
talk
not
about
just
hip-hop.
He's not a sketchy guy in the garage.
Mm-hmm. We instantly clicked and began working together to produce one of my first professional demos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I met his girlfriend, Clarissa.
And here's good old Clarissa. Here she is.
Enter her.
Yes, yes. And so again, she's out there working, she's making these connections, all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now she's going to tell this interesting little Thanksgiving story. So here she is, working, and then her mom is about to marry this man, or had married this man.
Well, she says, "Making valuable connections in New York City was certainly crucial to my career. But getting out of my mother's house was no longer just a desire. It was necessary."
It was needed.
A necessity. Yeah.
It was absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we got two things going on here. But the ultimate end goal is getting out of mama's house.
Pat's still with the strange man.
Yes. That she's about to marry one. Or she did marry one.
Yeah.
And they go to Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And this man has the nerve. So they're out at like a restaurant. Yeah. Has the nerve to tell Mariah and the nephew, mm-hmm. who's younger than Mariah even, like what, 6 years younger, I think?
Wasn't she eight?
She was eight, so something like that.
Yeah.
Again, the numbers are all off. But girl, how are you going to ask these children to pay for Thanksgiving dinner?
These are your children now.
Right? Could you imagine like what you would even do?
Yeah.
And Mariah's like throwing out her crumpled up dollars.
Lucky she had some money.
Thank goodness she was out there doing those demos.
So she
had something.
Yeah.
I'm just like the nerve, but then here we go. And I know we keep hating on Pat. Like she did the best she could. And, you know, but what is Pat doing? You're sitting there and this man is going to tell your daughter that she has to pay for her portion of Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
Have you lost your mind? Girl, I wish.
I wonder what they were eating.
It's probably turkey.
But aren't you supposed to cook at home yourself?
No, girl, you don't know. The restaurants be full. In New York City, the restaurants be full. And
really?
Oh, yes. I've worked many of them.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, I mean, the whole family comes out. Oh, it's like all like 10 parties of 10, parties of 20, parties of 5, parties of 2.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I know, it sounds weird, but...
Hang on. Well, now I've got questions because here's Sean at the dinner. Where's Allison?
Where is Allison?
Where's Morgan?
Where is everybody else? Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. It's true. Where are all these people?
Yeah.
And I just can't believe Pat is just sitting by. I will never get over it. I mean, I'm sure Pat had to say something, but Mariah just doesn't write it in the book. But I'm just like, I'm just side-eyeing Pat every 3 seconds. I don't know why.
Hang on. Let's rewind when she was side-eyeing Alfred Roy for making Mariah pay for the ice cream.
Oh, right. And he's like, is it
like she was confused
a loan
by it. Yes.
Or a borrow? And it's like, can you please just give this little girl 50 cents?
I didn't mind that lesson, like teaching her how to use language.
True.
But Pat was the one like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Acting like he's, you know, making her pay for dinner or something.
Right. Like, and she comes back saying, like, why can't you just give the girl 50 cents? Well, how come your new husband can't just buy the dinner for everyone?
Yeah.
He should be ashamed of himself. Like, how embarrassing that you don't want to pay for your new wife's family Thanksgiving.
I know.
And the fact that, like, y'all just, no, I'm not down for that at all. I don't like this man. I don't even think Mariah mentions his name, does she?
No, we don't know his name.
No, we don't know his name, but I do remember her talking about him in, like, maybe early interviews that she was doing. Mm. Because, you know, even as Mariah writes here, she's like, you know, she ended up paying for the whole divorce. Paying for your mama's divorce?
Mm.
Pat. Just saying.
But when was that? Did we know?
So this, yes, because she says, well, the Thanksgiving dinner
hang on. She was famous when that divorce happened.
Oh, definitely.
So I bet there's also some money to be split. I'm sure Mariah gave Pat some money.
Oh, for sure.
Just to, like, get by.
So, yeah. And, you know, Mariah has to, you know, pay for the legal fees of sorting all of that mess out.
Like, we're not splitting Pat's Shaq money or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right. There's Mariah money involved now.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. But yeah, but I think that Thanksgiving dinner, only because she says that she and Sean had went out to see Back to the Future 2.
Uh-huh.
That Back to the Future 2 came out in 1989, girl.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is literally, like, right before she hits it big. Like, her album's in the works and whatnot.
Really?
But, like, she hasn't, like, debuted yet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But you're right, because by the time the mom had divorced this man, they were, was already famous. She was already famous.
Well, but then she says, then the jerk ended up suing me for the rights to some fictitious Mariah Carey doll. So he knows she's got value.
Yeah, he's running a scam through and through.
Yeah.
I remember one time, I think Mariah was joking, though. She was like, oh, yeah, you know, my mom married this man. And then he tried suing me for, like, filling a cavity of mine or something. Like, I don't know what interview that was, but I specifically remember. So I think this man may have been a dentist or may not have been a dentist. Maybe she was being facetious.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then the whole doll thing. Girl, get out of here. Anyways, but here's the mom getting divorced and Mariah always giving back to good old Patricia. But what's Patricia giving here? She can't even tell her new husband to pay for the dinner.
Mm.
Pat.
The final paragraph is so good because it really just describes the energy of New York City. So she says, to me, the city had raw grit and an impossible chicness. It was in perpetual motion, masses of people walking fast, no one looking the same, but all moving in sync. The city was crazy messenger bikes whizzing around and countless yellow cabs zigzagging through the streets like a swarm of rough bumblebees. So good, that whole paragraph.
So the whole thing, it really puts you in 1980s New York City.
Yeah, and we're not on Long Island by the beach anymore.
Or in a shack. She's now in, like, tiny, tiny little apartments, but we'll get into that in the next chapter. But I love how she also says at the end here, she says, hello, baby, I was made for this.
Mm.
Like, she's finally feeling at home,
mm-hmm.
but also, like, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to do it.
Yeah.
I've been waiting.
Yeah.
So she's ready. She has all the tools she needs.
Yes.
And the God-given talent, of course. So.
And she's not rolling up trying to get an internship. She's been working on Long Island.
Ain't that something?
And she's been working in the city.
Like, she's already come into the city with a resume of all kinds of legit stuff.
Yeah.
Girl, she got demos.
Yes.
She got jingles.
Yeah.
She got, you know, everything. She got the voice.
The only thing really that changed was the commute.
Right. Now she's not having to go back and forth to high school.
Yeah.
With all the jocks talking about Hojos.
Uh-huh. So she's off the island.
She's off the island finally.
Into Manhattan Island.
Right. Well, from one island to another.
I was going to say, from one situation to another situation, kind of the same.
That's sort of all what Sing Sing is about.
Yeah.
It's like she goes from this family dysfunction into, like, an adult relationship.
Professional. Relationship dysfunction.
It's a lot. But we're going to get through it. We just started part two, Sing Sing. But thanks for listening. And we will be back with more.
Yeah.